The markets. We just can't get enough of them.
Markets are the drivers of your wealth and investment strategy.
Welcome to Magic Markets with your co-hosts, The Finance Ghost and Mohammed Nalla.
Together, we have more than 25 years of combined experience in the markets.
This podcast is brought to you by Future Forex, and you can go back to episode 170 for an in-depth discussion with co-founder and CEO Harry Scherzer on how South Africans can avoid letting their offshore annual allowance go to waste. Having processed more than 22 billion rand on behalf of clients since inception, Future Forex has recently been approved as one of South Africa's first CASPs, crypto asset service providers, giving further legitimacy to their exceptional track record in crypto arbitrage investment. And remember to always do your own research when considering any financial product. Welcome to episode 172 of Magic Markets, made possible by Future Forex. Go back and listen to their CEO and co-founder, Harry Scherzer, who spoke to us a couple of shows ago about crypto arbitrage and the opportunities for you to not let your offshore allowances go to waste. Speaking of offshore, of course, that's a big focus for us here at Magic Markets, and we try and bring you as many equity opportunities as possible, really, and things to think about in that space. So, Mo, today we're doing a company that I'd genuinely never heard of until you mentioned it to me, and I'll let you introduce it. And I'm doing Goldman Sachs. And the reason we chose these two, you know, what do they have in common? You're doing United Health Group, is that both of them would have doubled your money in the past 5 years in dollars. And they are both pretty much blue chips, not some weird speculative thing on the international market. So it's pretty cool when you can see stuff like that. And I'm looking forward to doing this.
Yeah, Go. Certainly an interesting set of stocks that we're looking at this week. I mean, Goldman Sachs, we've covered banking, US banking previously. That's a stock that most of our listeners will be familiar with. I'm covering United Health Group, as you've indicated, and it's not a stock that we've covered at Magic Markets Premium yet, but it is a stock that I've looked at for a long time. And the reason I wanted to cover it is this is the stock I love to hate. We're covering Netflix in Magic Markets Premium this week. That's the stock you've loved to hate. United Health, that's one for me because I've watched it for a very long time. I've always thought it's expensive. And guess what? It keeps rallying. Now, to your point, over 5 years, a comparable performance to Goldman Sachs. But over the last year, it's not been that exciting. Low single-digit share price performance. And we want to unpack what's actually been happening. So I'm going to go first because United Health is not a stock that a lot of people are going to be familiar with. I'm going to give you a quick rundown on that because they are a diversified health and well-being company. I mean, that's the corporate gumph, but they are really just a medical insurer. And if you want to compare this to a South African firm, you could think of something like a Discovery Health. That would really be a decent comparative because United Healthcare not only providing healthcare coverage and insurance, but they also provide what they call information and technology enabled health services. So if you could picture something like Vitality, that's what comes through there. They're also a very key component of US healthcare and help administrate Medicare and Medicaid benefits as well. And so it is a fully fledged, let's call it medical insurance and healthcare stock. Now, interestingly enough, on this particular company, like I say, over the last 5 years, it's been a fantastic performer. It's been one of those stocks that you want to hold if you're being defensive. And again, just given the performance we've seen in the tech and the growth sectors more recently, that's partially one of the reasons why the sector as a whole and United Health doesn't look as fantastic on a much shorter term time period. But I want to touch on one key point before I go into the numbers, which I'll then have as my second point. And that is, interestingly enough, a cyber attack. Now, in a world of big data, in a world of healthcare analytics, this is really critical stuff. And United Health Group, they were actually the victim of a significant cyber attack. And I say significant because you can actually see that on the financial metrics. I'm going to mention one financial metric as this point. It actually amounted to 74 cents per share in terms of a direct hit to their earnings. And the operational disruptions were also quite severe. They don't share detail in terms of what information was compromised, but it did compromise on United Health's ability to actually execute on the services that they wanted to provide to their care providers, to the pharmacies that they service. Now, despite that impact, the company still managed to maintain its financial outlook, beat on earnings, and that is the reason why you saw a very sharp response. The stock rallied 14% on this earnings release. I'm going to get into the numbers behind that as my next talking point goes.
So certainly the company that I'm doing this week needs no real introduction, and that is Goldman Sachs. It's probably the most famous name in banking. And as I said at the start, a share price performance that has doubled your money over 5 years. Now, of course, it really helped Goldman's to have all this excess liquidity running around in the market, clearly, because liquidity drives activity in the markets, and Goldman Sachs, like you always say, Mo, happy to get the clips on that deal ticket, literally. Now, the Fed has tried very hard to mop up that excess liquidity, but you cannot keep a good investment banker down. When the balance sheets are flush, they do listings. When they are tight, they do M&A, where the strong balance sheets buy up the weak, or they help with debt raisings and restructurings to help take pressure off balance sheets. Basically, investment bankers in the US can make money in almost any situation. They're like a utility player in a sports team. They make their best money in a listings boom, but they tend to make good money the rest of the time. Now, Goldman CEO David Solomon, who in the earnings transcript, I've never seen anyone use the word very so many times. It's incredible. There's actually one specific paragraph where he must use it, I'm not exaggerating, about 20 times. He describes the current situation as the early stages of a reopening of the capital markets, with IPOs picking up again. Now, perhaps investors are just getting used to a higher for longer interest rate environment. They're not just sitting on their hands anymore, waiting for the Fed to actually drop rates. They've simply adjusted what they are willing to pay for assets. People want to do stuff. They want to do deals. They want to move on. They want to raise money. They can't wait forever. Now, this means we find ourselves in a willing buyer, willing seller environment again, albeit at different prices. Now, Goldman Sachs doesn't really care about the price. I mean, they do kind of because they take a percentage fee on it, but they really just want to see activity, lots and lots of activity. Where we have seen activity is somewhere like debt capital markets, where volumes for investment grade debt hit a record for the first 3 months of the year. There's an interesting one that I didn't expect to see. They've seen lots of debt refinancing activity as well. Now, I think what's happening here is that a lot of the cheap debt raised during the pandemic just doesn't last forever. It really doesn't. And I think a lot of companies have put off going and refinancing debt. They're hoping the rates will come down. But at some point, they need money and things mature. And that's just how this works. So at some point, they have to go and refinance debt. So I think what's happening here is there's an overall acceptance in the market that rates are higher for longer. Corporates need to act accordingly. Goldman Sachs, very happy to earn fees on that.
Yeah, the fascinating thing for me here, Ghost, is just how you can map the performance of companies, the performance of market sectors against the economic performance and what's been happening at a macro level. And again, you know, if we go into an era where rates remain higher for an extended period of time, I don't think we go back down to the, let's call it zero rates that we had seen over the course of the last decade. Well, that has some significant bearing, not just on banks, but also in terms of consumer discretionary spend. And that is the reason why, again, I like United Health just as a sector, healthcare being a defensive. Maybe you want to position defensively in the kind of coming economic cycle that we're going to be seeing. Let me jump from that back into the numbers at United Health. And maybe before I even go there, there's been a lot of talk at a macro level about maybe universal healthcare in the US, and it was voted down at Congress for, let's call it, more realistic offerings, a more realistic legislation. Why is this topical? Is I know that is a debate down in South Africa, and it does have a firm bearing in terms of the outlook for insurers. Now, let's look at the outlook, and then let's look at the performance. United Health reporting robust revenue, just under $100 billion for the quarter. That's just for the quarter. You know, and that beat analyst expectations. And if we take that down to an earnings per share number, this was the big beat that I was telling you about earlier. Earnings per share for the quarter came through at around $6.91 versus market expectations of $6.63. That is a considerable beat. That's the reason why the stock rallied 14% on the announcement, is that that headline number just significantly better than the market was expecting. Now, remember, if we take into account the cyber attack that I'd mentioned to you, that was a hit of around 74 cents per share on the earnings line. So that significant, roughly around 10%, showing you that if the cyber attack had not happened, the performance of the company, excluding the attack, was absolutely stellar. Now, what's actually driving that? We did see greater utilization of healthcare benefits in the US, and that helps a player like United Health. We also have, on a very much a longer term, a bigger picture story, a mega trend. You've got aging demographics in the first world, in developed economies. And when you have aging demographics, you have a greater healthcare need. So as a sector, and then going all the way back to that market cycle point and economic cycle point that we started the segment with, you can actually see how a player like United Health, provided you buy it at the right price, does have a strong and steady, it might not be a tech, it might not be Nvidia, but it has a strong and steady underpin to its business model, to its cycle. And provided that legislation doesn't change in an adverse way, a player like this that is really quite dominant in its industry is positioned quite strongly. I'm going to wrap up this particular segment by just maybe touching on what I perceive to be a couple of bull points as well as bear points. And the first one I would say is that, you know, you've just got its dominance in healthcare markets. They are one of the largest players there. They're not alone. I'll touch on some competitors and share price performance as my next talking point. But I see that as a strong bull point, superimposed on the fact that they're not just an insurer, but they also have health analytics. And we know how big data is going to become increasingly valuable over time. But to the downside, like I say, big regulatory risks. We don't know what's going to happen with Medicare and Medicaid. We've got a US election this year. The Trump administration may come through with something fundamentally different. So keep an eye out for that, because despite how strong this business is, it is really at the mercy of regulators. And I would see that as probably my biggest headwind to considering a position here, Ghost.
I love that you've talked about the sort of strength and resilience of the business and how it just gets on with it. And yes, there are risks, but I guess in some ways, Goldman Sachs is actually much the same story here, because they also get on with it and they are doing a lot to make their business more resilient and maybe just a bit more dependable, a bit less cyclical. So there is more to what they do than just the capital markets side of the business. They also have their intermediation business, which generates revenue off flows in fixed income, credit and commodities, as well as equities. And together, those generated record revenue this quarter. It's great to operate in the US market. Don't ignore that asset and wealth management business either, where assets under supervision rose to a record of, wait for it, $2.8 trillion this quarter. Trillion with a T. This is the 25th consecutive quarter of long-term fee-based net inflows. 25th consecutive quarter of inflows. Look, I don't know for sure if there are any South African listed financial services houses who can claim that, but I would wager that there probably are not. So this is quite the annuity underpinned to the business. And this does wonders for making the business less cyclical, less risky, actually. They talk about this as being durable revenue, which is also quite a nice way to describe it. And they also point out that there are operating leverage benefits that they haven't even achieved here yet as the business continues to scale. So if you can just imagine a sort of suite of banking and financial services, and you think about the juiciest and most exciting ones, that is largely where Goldman Sachs is playing. Just one example here, the 18% return on equity in the global banking and markets business in this quarter. Bearing in mind, that is a dollar-based return on equity. In Rand, you would be happy with that from your local bank, never mind in dollars. It is a huge return on capital for a group of this size. Another example is the roughly 9% organic growth in wealth management assets, which is a direct result of Goldman's flexing its muscles in high net worth wealth management. That's where they decided to focus, and it works. They also have a very strong offering in alternative assets as well, which is a growing trend in the world. I mean, that's something we've talked about on this show with various guests before. So on the whole, just a strong business, getting stronger, becoming more annuitized over time. Plus, of course, this great cyclical underpin that says, if stuff is happening in the US market, we're going to make money on it.
Yeah, I love that contrast. I also love the fact that Goldman's gets on with it. They stick to their knitting. I mean, they did have a couple of missteps. I remember a card business that they tried to do in partnership with someone out there. That didn't work out fantastically. And so this move towards, I guess, the wealth management focus, the investment banking focus, that's very much in character for Goldman Sachs. And you can compare that to the likes of JP Morgan. That is definitely a stock we've covered at Magic Markets Premium in detail. We called it the original gangster, I guess, in that banking industry. But some interesting contrasts in terms of the competitive landscape there. Let me use that to go into my third point, because a company like United Health doesn't operate in a vacuum either. It's a competitive market. Maybe they're the original gangster, and what does that look like? So I'm going to touch on a couple of the competitors, and then I'm going to throw in one that I know you're going to love, Ghost. It's Discovery Health in South Africa, and we're going to look at it in dollar terms, right? But before we even go there, let's look at the US market, because the US market is huge. And we've got a player called CVS Health Corporation. That's a stock we've covered at Magic Markets Premium as well. So again, a very detailed library that can really fill out your knowledge of a variety of sectors there. Go and check it out if you're not a subscriber. But CVS Health, again, a comparison by South African standards would be maybe a Dis-Chem, so predominantly a pharmacy type of business. But it's no longer just a pharmacy, because they've acquired a player called Aetna, and Aetna was a health insurer. So it's like Dis-Chem moving into the health insurance space. CVS Health competing with United Health on that particular front. Then we've got Cigna Corporation, a traditional, again, health insurer. We've got a company that was called Anthem and then rebranded themselves to Elevance. And that seemed to work because the share price has been elevated since then. They exist in, again, the health benefit insurance space. And then Humana, and Humana is not a great example here. Again, a traditional insurer. But if you look at that share price performance, and I'm going to go into that shortly, just not fantastic. And showing you that even if you get the sector right, you've sometimes got to back the biggest, the meanest player, very much, I guess, like your Goldman Sachs story that you had there, Ghost. Let me get into the share price performance, because this is where it gets interesting. We mentioned that over 5 years, you would have doubled your money in Goldman's. You would have also doubled your money in United Health. So if we look at that over a five-year time period, in fact, United Health sitting at the top of its sector, it's outperformed all of those other competitors I mentioned to you. And this is really where you've got to look at a player like Discovery, not looking fantastic over that time period. It's down in dollar terms around 30% versus doubling your money in dollar terms in pretty much, I would say, most of the competitors that I'd mentioned. Even if you didn't pick the winners, you could have picked some of the losers. And if you had picked the losers, you would have still been up in dollar terms around 25 to 30%. However, more recently, if you look at the performance over just the last year, that's where a player like United Health has come under pressure. A very lackluster, wait for it, 2% growth. I'm not even asking you to guess here, Ghost. It's 2% growth. That's nothing to write home about. And you would expect in a defensive sector like this to go and pick up a decent dividend at least. Well, that's not the story here. The stock only trading on around a 1.5% dividend yield. So not a fantastic performance coming through there in terms of just the last year. But if you look at the long-term share price, you can see strong performance all the way up into 2022, and then it appears to have gotten stuck. So the big question mark in terms of, do I look at this? Do I look at the stock? Do I look at the sector? Is, are we going to reach an inflection point in terms of just the macroeconomic cycle? And is that going to breathe another leg of life into the sector? And if it does, is United Health a strong contender or not? The last thing I want to mention here as my closing off point is that the interesting thing of the sector and this stock specifically is if you go and have a look at its beta, right? Its beta, and that's really how it tracks to overall market movements, it actually has a negative beta. And that tells you that you get effective diversification. So if you are concerned around just where markets have gone at a headline level about this rampant tech story, that's why you maybe want to consider sectors or stocks like United Health over the longer term to diversify you against some of those cyclical changes. And that's really fundamental to me wanting to do a little bit more work on this investment thesis on whether we consider the sector or the stock, Ghost.
Yeah, it's really, really interesting. I mean, I'd never heard of this thing. It's so brilliant to always learn something new. I guess to finish off on Goldman's, and to your point, sometimes the big businesses can sometimes get things wrong and you don't always pick a winner. Generally speaking, picking the biggest and baddest in that market can work quite well in the US, but even Goldman Sachs doesn't get everything right. They have made some mistakes. So for example, transaction banking, that hasn't really been a strong point for them. They are still losing money in their platform solutions business. As an analyst pointed out to them on the latest call, in early March, they said they are building global payments around the world. And then 7 days later, they talked about closing Japan and focusing on the US and Europe instead. So like so many corporates, I think they just struggle to avoid the temptation to step outside of their immediate comfort zone, their circle of competence. And when challenged on this, the CEO talks about being very committed to transactional banking, but they want to execute properly and deliver profitability, not just top line growth. I mean, fair enough, but that doesn't really tell you much, right? They also want their platforms business to be break even by 2025, which would certainly be a lot better than the current situation with a pre-tax loss of $117 million in the quarter. Some of the missteps, as well as certain parts of the business not being as lucrative as global banking and markets, for example, mean the group return on equity came in at 14.8% this quarter. Now, that is still a solid outcome, especially in dollars. Again, there are South African banks that are not doing that in rands. And since I have mentioned a number rather than some of the strategic stuff I've covered previously, I'll now quickly note the other problem that gets raised in the context of Goldman's, and that is quite simply growth in what the bankers themselves get paid. Goldman's has come under fire before for a situation where the talent seems to get all the benefits rather than the shareholders. Goldman Sachs is very famous for being really just the ultimate bankers club, right? You will not often see a firm that splits its expenses primarily between compensation and non-compensation, or comp and non-comp as they call it. The Goldman bankers work notoriously hard. They attract the very best talent, and that talent demands to be paid for the time and energy and effort and frankly soul sacrifice that is going into this thing. So to make sure that they can pay these people properly, Goldman is very focused on bringing their non-comp charges down, something they did achieve in this quarter. They're literally as blunt as that. You know, they'll save everywhere else and they'll try to look after their staff as best they can. But in the advisory game, it works. So for me, I am a happy holder of Goldman Sachs. It's part of my long-term US portfolio. It's basically direct exposure to the US capital market, which is ultimately just the home of capitalism. I also hold JP Morgan, which then gives me a more annuitized exposure. I mean, also it's Jamie Dimon, let's be honest. So between the two of them, I think that works. And there's nothing I've seen in this latest quarter that scares me at Goldman's. Feels like it's just getting better. Double your money in 5 years in dollars. And it's not a heroic or ingenious thing to go and buy Goldman Sachs. It's just a thematic view on US banking and picking the best of breed in investment banking. And you can double your money in 5 years in dollars. It's incredible.
Yeah, I mean, that Goldman story for me is maybe a little too niche when we compare to a player like JP Morgan. You know, we've said that's the OG. Also, when you compare CEOs, I mean, Jamie Dimon is really an institution in and of itself. And maybe that's the risk for JP Morgan is Dimon can't be in the driver's seat forever. We've got David Solomon at Goldman Sachs, very colorful. He DJs in his free time. So, you know, if he's got the time, the inclination, the energy to DJ, it means that if things really, you know, hit a bit of a wobbly at Goldman Sachs, he's got a little bit of time to maybe come back in, get stuck in. I don't own Goldman Sachs. I have owned JP Morgan in the past. But, you know, both very interesting stocks. And if you're going to pick the big, strong players, well, they both are firm contenders in that space. But what do you think as our listeners? Let us know on social media. It's at Magic Markets Pod, one word, at Finance Ghost and at Muhammad Nalla, all on X, or go and find us on LinkedIn. Pop us a note on there. We hope you've enjoyed this look at two very different companies, but also highlighting the contrast of just the investment opportunities that exist out there in the global markets if you're willing to look beyond South Africa's borders. Join us in Magic Markets Premium if you'd like for only 99 Rand a month. We think that's great value. And until next week, same time, same place. Thanks and cheers.
Cheers. This podcast is for informational purposes only and is not financial or investment advice. Please speak to your personal financial advisor.